I am the head of the Paris office and the head of the arbitration practice on a worldwide basis.
And you're an arbitrator?
From time to time, enough to get to know the reactions of arbitrators vis-à-vis difficult problems, but I'm mostly a litigator in arbitration.
And you're also a professor?
Right. Oddly enough, it serves a purpose in this field because you argue cases before arbitrators quite often, so it's important to be part of the club.
So in your spare time?
In my spare time, I do arbitration work, of course, as a hobby. You often say that the arbitration agreement has a value which you can quantify. Certainly you can at the end of the day. If you have your arbitration in the country of your opponent and it's a public entity, you know that the courts are not all that independent. You may win, you may have a great claim for 100 million, but if you have an award for 100 million, you know that it may be set aside, so maybe you want to settle for 50. In that case, the arbitration place right. is worth 50 or 40 because you will have a discount
exactly.
anywhere for settlement. Most pro-arbitration countries, i.e. a large number of countries, have more or less the same rules and the same law on arbitration. What makes a huge difference is the style of arbitration. You still have huge differences if you use a common law, generally a common law country or a civil law country. Unfortunately, and this may change, but it's not yet there, in the US and in England, the courts have a tendency to interfere in the arbitral process a lot more than in civil law countries, France, Switzerland in particular. And by choosing an arbitration in London or an arbitration in Paris or Switzerland, it's going to make a huge difference in terms of cost in two respects. One, the courts may interfere in London a lot more. For instance, if there is a dispute on the validity of the arbitration agreements, the courts in a Fiona Trust case of 2006 have taken the view that it's for the courts to decide this. So if you have your arbitration, it may start, but then you may have to stop right away because the other is making an allegation of fraud or whatever, and the courts have taken the view that this allegation is going to be decided by the courts themselves, talking about the English courts. So they may be good courts and they may end up with the right result, but the cost associated with that is maybe enormous. Now, if you are in France or Switzerland, for instance, probably the two most arbitration-friendly countries in the world, the courts would say, no, ask the arbitrators. The arbitrators are good enough to resolve that, even if it's an allegation of fraud, even if this allegation of fraud touches on the arbitration agreement itself. In that case, the arbitrators can decide this, should decide this, and if their award is bad, there will be some control after the fact, but you don't stop the arbitration just because you have an issue regarding the arbitration agreement. And in terms of cost, this makes a huge difference. And also the tendency, even if you don't have this ancillary litigation, the tendency in England and in the US is to emulate the courts before arbitrators. And you would have lengthy arbitrations, say an arbitration which would take a week or 10 days in Paris or Geneva may take 3-4 weeks in London. So, and there is a balance between the effectiveness and the fairness. We think on the continent that you can have a good arbitration, even if you hear only 6 witnesses and not 35 witnesses, and if you hear them in a week and you didn't necessarily need 3 weeks. So, all depending on the matter and the size of the dispute. So by choosing the right place, you may streamline your arbitration vastly. One factor which does have an impact is the number of arbitrators, though, because I have done lots of arbitration. I've seen maybe more than 300 or whatever. I lost track, but I'm coming to the conclusion that co-arbitrators are seldom neutral. And in fact, you don't want them to be neutral. You appoint them to be on your side and help your case, whatever. But of course, you have another arbitrator on the other side doing the reverse. And at the end of the day, the decision is in the hands of the chairperson. Now, there is one element which is clear, is that with three arbitrators, it will be more costly. That's a fact of life, because you would have to pay three people and not one. And maybe more importantly, it will slow down the process, because of course the chairman has to be polite with the co-arbitrators. Of course, if the co-arbitrators are saying, well, I'm sorry, I'm not free in the coming 3 months, he has to indulge, at least initially. Maybe the third time the co-arbitrator cancels a date, the chair will react in an authoritative manner. But, you know, it nevertheless will slow down the process. And what do you do when you are an arbitrator, when one of your co-arbitrators is sitting on the draft procedural order or something? Okay, you can push, you can say, okay, it's going to go tomorrow if you don't answer, but it will nevertheless slow down the process. What if your co-arbitrator, the co-arbitrator resigns or threatens to resign? And so on. So it is a factor which has a cost. It may be better in certain type of disputes, like the large construction disputes on a power plant or something like that. It may be better to have three people when the case is extremely complicated. But in many cases, it's just additional expense and time.
What are we giving up by not having three arbitrators in those cases?
Nothing. You are giving up having two non-independent, because that's the fact of life. The co-arbitrators are sometimes not independent, or often are not independent. People who are sitting next to the person who will indeed decide, do most of the work,